How do you debone rattlesnake meat?
It's a process. There's lots of little bones, so it takes a while. I usually order mine deboned. It's very expensive, though. Jean has great stories about deboning rattlesnake.
Do you want to share one, Jean?
Sure. No, we definitely... I have a friend who gave me 3 whole rattlesnakes. So we skinned them. I learned how to skin it. And then I put it in a Dutch oven and cooked it like you would a roast because our smoker wasn't available. But once we did that, then we deboned the meat and it flaked apart. And it was quite the process of little bones like fish bones. And then I also had another group of children try it themselves as well. So...
And she's terrified of snakes.
Terrified. I had to use welding gloves.
Did you?
To even take it out of the sack as well as out of the oven. But my son, one of my sons, just ponied up and he's not scared. He just pulled apart until it was done. And it really makes a difference with the fresh rattlesnake meat.
Hello and welcome to The Right Question, a radio program and podcast featuring authors from the Western United States. Our funding comes from Humanities Montana and members of Montana Public Radio. I'm Sarah Aronson, talking with Chef Barry Bolds and author Jean Peterson about the Big Sky Bounty Cookbook, Local Ingredients and Rustic Recipes. It's not your average Montana-themed cookbook of huckleberries and beef. Instead, the book features locally sourced ingredients and recipes from east of the Rocky Mountains, including rattlesnake cakes, choke cherry soup, Native American beef tongue mini tacos, antelope chops, and grandma's raw apple cake. In addition, the book offers historical images and prose about the history of wild game in Montana, from bison and sheep to wild salmon. So get comfortable and grab your favorite beverage. We're about to get cooking. One of the things I really admire about this book is it's about Big Sky Bounty, and it includes a lot of what I might think of as rare or unusual game products and recipes. Why did you feel the need to write this book?
When I first met Barry, she just knows she's a native Montanan, and she has cooked and lived amongst these resources all of her life as well. We also come from, I have hunters in our family, and we do utilize a lot of the natural resources of Montana. So elk, deer, fishing, even moose and the steaks. I felt it necessary to share the plentitude that we have in our back door of these natural resources at hand, but also we have 4 children, so I felt like I wasn't giving those resources the best service by what I was creating. But Barry is such a unique chef, and she has ways of making these resources just take the flavor to another level. And so once we were talking about how she adds a few things here, a few things there, it came together. And then she has great stories along with it. She would share with what they would do with pigeon and quail and fishing with and choke cherries. So there was that added element. And so I felt like it was really important to share the plentitude we have in our backyard.
So Jean came to me because as a mom of 4 children and hunters, you know, a lot of people make their wild game the same exact way all the time. Mm-hmm. So she was looking for different ways to fix elk and use what she had in her garden. So that's where I stepped in, and we would share recipes, or I would give her ideas of what she could do with her elk.
The book also includes historical photographs, quotes from famous authors from John Steinbeck to Christopher Paolini, and is accompanied by words that catalog the history of game in Montana. How did you know you wanted to take this mosaic approach to the book?
There's multiple layers of this book, which makes it so unique, and multiple layers of history as well with each recipe and the historical elements. Our publisher, Arcadia Publishing, and the History Press, they are a history press. So when we presented it to them, we had some historical elements in there as far as the depth of Barry's recipes and taking that into a level, but then also showcasing Montana on a broader level of the resources. And that was, I wanted to show again that bounty that we've had for hundreds of years that has carried through to today. And so it kind of goes back and forth from when Lewis and Clark found just the plethora of animals. And then it also talks about the stories in it. It's historical, gives the accuracy of how the decimation went down and then the rise for conservation, management, and preservation of these animals so we can still have those sustainable resources today and use them as they did 200 years ago.
I'm so glad you brought up that part because I found myself as a reader and as a cook reading this story of the bison and then feeling conflicted about like, well, can I eat bison now? I'm so curious. What would you say to a listener or cook who's like, I don't know, how do I ethically move forward with a recipe knowing the history?
Well, I think in Montana, growing up with hunters and farmers, ranchers, and I grew up on a Native American reservation, that it was so important to use all parts of the meat. And it's something, I think, for a hunter, it's spiritual for hunting. So I think it's okay. I mean, they're not shoved in krills and Tyson chicken or...
You make some really interesting points, Chef Barry, about wild shrimp that I want to come back to, but I want to stick with your history, which is that you were born and raised on the Fort Peck, Assiniboine, and Sioux reservations, and the book includes Native American recipes. And in the recipe for Indian tacos, you address fry bread, and you couch it by saying, this was born out of a necessity of using government rations. It is not an indigenous food to Native Americans, but it is a generational food.
Yes.
What does it mean to you to include Native American recipes in the book?
It's very important. As I grew up on a Native American reservation, and my parents owned a drugstore for 56 years, and my dad was very involved in the community, I was surrounded by that culture. So I wanted to showcase that because it's part of who I am, even though I'm not Native American, but I was born and raised there.
One of the recipes is for Wajapi soup, chokecherry soup. What does it taste like?
It's delicious. That's another thing we learned to make in one of my home ec classes from one of the moms, Native American woman, Mrs. Crawford. We would go down to the powwow. So I've tried different kinds of Native American foods growing up, but it's very, very good. And you can make other things. It goes into bison cakes, and you can use that for a topping or a soup.
In thinking just about the recipes, what was the recipe that each of you had to try over and over again just to get right?
I made all of the recipes except for the risotto. Barry makes it very user-friendly. I made them over and over because I wanted to, as well as we took a lot of photographs, so it was trying to get that right element for the photographs.
I think the hardest part for me was condensing them down from large quantities into usable quantities, because a lot of them I did not have recipes for, or they were written on scratch papers, and I had to go back and figure out what's a cup to a tablespoon for 4 to 6 people.
Chef Barry, will you make a case for antelope? I've had a lot of wild game in my time, and I think one of the things you mentioned is like it's underrated, but it's really good.
It's one of my favorite. The most important thing, I think, is to get an antelope that hasn't been ran when it's shot, or shot with a bow and arrow, or however it's hunted. If it's ran long distances, the meat is gamey, I guess you would say. You have to dress it right in the field is very, very important.
I want to talk about sourcing, because I didn't know this. There are 10 types of snakes in eastern Montana. And in the book, you have a recipe, rattlesnake cakes with roasted red pepper, remoulade, which you claim tastes like salmon cakes. How did you come across this recipe?
I was doing my 40th birthday bash, and I had different kinds of wild game. And that was one that I wanted to do, but I had to make it so people would want to try it. So I took part of a recipe from a salmon cake and turned it into the rattlesnake cake. And then with the remoulade sauce, it just brings it up a notch, and it's really good. People tried it.
What's fun about the remoulade sauce, too, is you have this wonderful cake with red peppers and different ingredients in it, but that remoulade sauce has a splash of red pepper in it, and so it's cool. So you have the warm cake, you have the cool topping, but it has that bite to it, so it kind of just tops off the rattlesnake cake element with a little bite at the end that leaves a taste in your mouth. It's just good. Just, it's really good.
Did it make the process of deboning worth it, Jean?
Yes.
There are also recipes that call for beaver and moose and salmon. And I'm wondering, how do you recommend to listeners and home cooks, how do we get these products?
You can get anything online anymore. I used to use a game house in Colorado called House of Smoke. And I know there's a place in Las Vegas you can get anything that's legal.
And that's what's also unique about this cookbook. While it still celebrates our Montana themes and natural resources here and the big sky, it crossed our western, midwestern, and eastern regions of our United States. Everybody has deer. We have trout. We have different fishes. We have beef. We have lamb. And there's great stuffed porterhouse pork chops in here that it's across the board, very universal for any region of our states.
In thinking about seafood, Jean, will you read us a little bit about Montana's salmon population?
Salmon is a little-known secret in Montana. While these delicious fish aren't indigenous, they have been stocked in Fort Peck Reservoir since the late 1940s and early 1950s. The first salmon stocked were the kokanee salmon, and coho were stocked in the late 1960s and through the early 1970s. Chinook salmon were introduced in the Missouri River in 1971 and 1972, and then stocked in the Fort Peck Reservoir in 1983 and nearly every year since. They were introduced to give anglers another fish species to fish, as well as to introduce a cold water fish into Fort Peck Reservoir's cold water ecosystem. Chinook prey on lake herring, or cisco, which were also introduced in 1985 through 1986 and are now naturally reproducing and plentiful, with a lifespan of about 3 to 4 years. July through the end of September is commonly the best time to fish Chinook salmon at Fort Peck Reservoir, but they have been known to be caught throughout the year, with a state record for the largest salmon being 31 pounds in 1991. Montana has a snagging season, which happens from the shore between October 1st and November 30th, and a spear and gig season through the ice from December 1st to March 31st. Once filleted, these fish provide about 25 to 30% of their catch weight in meat.
Accompanying that passage is a recipe for the Yellowstone roll. Tell me about including sushi as part of this book.
Well, it's hard to get fresh fish in Montana, and I was always leery as a restaurant owner. I could get it flown in, but just how fast we would move through that product. So I decided to add smoked salmon into this so it had longer period of keeping.
Can you tell me what Thuringer is?
Thuringer is like sausage without the casings. So if you don't have casings or are turned off by the idea of casings, this is really easy. You just wrap it up in tin foil and you bake it. And it's a lot easier than making stuffing the sausage. The recipe came from my daughter's great-grandmother, and it is a German recipe.
How is it served?
With cheese and crackers, or you could put it out on a platter with mustard. I've actually even done Coney hot dogs with it, a Montana Coney dog.
This book also includes Irish and Norwegian recipes.
Yes.
Where do those come from?
Some of them I created myself or took a recipe from the Norwegian side because I didn't have any recipes passed down on that side. The Irish side, I got them from my grandmother.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to a conversation with Jean Peterson and Chef Barry Bolds about the Big Sky Bounty Cookbook, local ingredients and rustic recipes. I'm Sarah Aronson. This is The Right Question. Our full conversation can be found online at mtpr.org, where you can also subscribe to our podcast and follow us on Facebook. Stay tuned for dessert, where Jean will explain the recipe for non-German chocolate cake, and Chef Barry Bolds describes what brings her famous fudge sauce to life.
I'm dying to get to the dessert section. Why call this recipe raw apple cake?
There's raw apples in it. It's not made with applesauce. And that was my grandmother's recipe. And she would serve it with coffee. And it was her thing to bring to church and have out for guests. And she would just cut up the apples and they were raw and not cooked, but baked.
So I'm a baker, and I made the rhubarb crunch recipe, and I was really curious about the technique of making the syrup, which is like cornstarch, sugar, and water, and pouring it over the rhubarb before baking it. And I was just hoping you could tell me what that technique is called and why it's necessary for rhubarb.
I don't really know what the technique would be called. It was just a recipe passed down. I think it makes it crispy, but it makes it chewy at the same time. So just maybe a textural thing.
It was delicious and I felt really good about it because I was eating my vegetables at the same time. You write about a really important lesson in the book, German chocolate cake. Can you explain this to our listeners?
When I make this cake for people, I say, but it's not German. So Jean went ahead and when she was interviewing me for the side notes in the book, she elaborated on it in the book.
And it was a baker named Sam German who worked for Baker's Chocolate Company in the mid-1800s. And he made such a wonderful dessert with it and cake with it that Baker's Chocolate decided to call it German's Chocolate Cake. Actually, it was Baker's German's Sweet Chocolate is how it went. And then just in the translation over the years, it was reintroduced primarily in a Sunday cooking article in the Dallas paper in the mid-60s. It was taken from that. The S was just dropped because it was German's chocolate cake. So they ended up just through the years, it dropped the S and it comes to German chocolate cake.
Chef Barry, what makes your fudge sauce different?
I think just the different elements of the bittersweet chocolate, the unsweetened chocolate, and the hot coffee gives a different layer or element to the taste.
And how do you find it best served?
I love it over ice cream.
Just plain vanilla ice cream.
Ice cream with a brownie, a sundae.
And you have a brownie recipe in the book too, right?
Yes.
Perfect. I was thinking, for each of you, if you had to be stranded on a desert island with one of these recipes, you know, that you had to eat over and over again, which would you choose?
For me, it would be the blueberries with just the half and half with a little sugar, just because it's a childhood dessert. And my dad would get very excited and say, this is the best dessert ever. And it was so simple. So combined with the memory of that simple dessert, that would be the one.
And the recipe is just fresh blueberries, half and half, and a little bit of sugar. I mean,
yes.
That's literally what it is.
Yep.
Beautiful. What about you, Jean?
It would probably be a toss-up between the elk tenderloin with a huckleberry demi-glaze and then a salad with berries. Blue cheese dressing is amazing. I think you could make her blue cheese dressing fit into all major food groups and eat it all day and be okay.
Perfect. Every day. Fudge sauce and blue cheese dressing. That sounds great. Jean, in the acknowledgments of the book you write, a thank you note to your family. They taste tested, pulled innards out, skinned, deboned snakes, fished, hunted, photographed, put out fires, real ones, and waited patiently as I prepared these meals and worked toward the goals and completion of this book. What was the process like then for you in terms of how long did you work on these and what did it look like day to day? Did you make a recipe a day or several a day?
We did. It was a family affair for sure. The crayfish, my children went up and we caught the crayfish together up in a Montana lake. Many of the products that we use were their deer, were steers that we had raised that were in our freezer. The process of teaching them the beef tongue tacos, utilizing the whole animal. We try to do that to the best as we possibly can, being ethical hunters. But teaching them that there's other ways with all animals to utilize these recipes, they just all really chipped in. I mean, there were days that I would try to make three or four recipes. Barry and I took about, I'd say, 60 to 70% of the images. So there were literally hundreds of images and retakes. And the process started in September of 2013 were the first drafts of this cookbook. So there are elements there, and it really dove into it in May of 17 when we were contracted with our publisher. But everybody really chipped in, and there were times that we had peanut butter on a spoon because I wouldn't let them eat any of the really nice meals. So they did a lot, and they had a lot of patience, and they enjoy it. They love Barry. She's Auntie B, and they just wanted to be a part of it. And my son likes to take photos, and the rattlesnake, they had to pony up on that because I couldn't do that. And fish guts are not my thing either, but they can do it. So.
Barry, you run a catering business. Do you incorporate any of these recipes into your catering?
I do. A lot of my clients, they want the Montana experience, and that's what I give them. I'm kind of known in that catering circle now with my clients that I'm the go-to chef for Montana food.
In sticking with seafood, in your recipe for sugar tequila shrimp, you insist cooks buy wild American shrimp. Can you explain that insistence?
My parents had a drugstore for 56 years growing up, so I know the importance of shopping locally because back in the day, they were the drugstore, and my dad was the pharmacist, and once Walmart and Costco popped up, it really hurt their business. With that, I think with this whole cookbook, it's all geared towards shopping locally and supporting your area locally, wherever you're at. With the wild shrimp, it's important to know where you're getting it because you have no idea where your shrimp's coming from or how they're breeding it overseas. So it's really important to know where your product is coming from.
My last question is, what do you say to the home cooks who are intimidated by recipes?
I have a saying, which I didn't know was a saying until my publishers brought it up, and it's live, love, cook with reckless abandon. You don't have to be the consummate host. Just cook, enjoy it, have fun, enjoy your family and your friends. It's really a family thing or a community thing to share what you cook and what you make.
One of the reasons that I would come to Barry is because I'm a very intimidated cook, and we had all these resources to cook. I'm very rustic in my elements, but Barry definitely gave me the confidence throughout her teaching and her recipes because they are so user-friendly. They are so user-friendly that it's just a wonderful combination to get your friends and family together and just make it happen and follow the steps that she's given and guidelines. And sometimes it turns out a little bit different, but it's all about that time and doing something unique, different, taking your food from one level to a wow level and having fun, like Barry says, just having fun with it. I had many friends come over and help taste test. My kids got to try things I never would have done before. And now they're very doable and it has become a very go-to cookbook for our family. And being able to utilize what Barry has her talents in.
I can't wait to debone a rattlesnake now. Is there anything else you want us to know about your book?
I just want everybody to run out and grab it because not only does it have good recipes, but it's such a beautiful cookbook about Montana. But it can be utilized anywhere. But it really just showcases how beautiful Montana is. And it is a foodie destination.
Celebrates Montana in multiple ways, as well as anybody in the regions around can celebrate and understand and see the same value in the resources and create a beautiful meal and dish for anybody.
Chef Barry Bolds was raised on the Fort Peck Assiniboine and Sioux Reservation. She now lives and runs her catering business out of Red Lodge, Montana. She's an accomplished chef, celebrating over 28 years in the industry. Jean Peterson has published 3 children's picture books and is a columnist and freelance writer for the Western Ag Reporter. She and her family live on their small farm near the Beartooth Mountains. Look for more information about their work at mtpr.org. where you can also subscribe to our podcast and follow us on Facebook. Many thanks to Humanities Montana for supporting us since 2008. And thanks to you for listening. I'm Sarah Aronson, and this has been The Right Question.
The Right Question is produced by Sarah Aronson, Beth Ann Austin, studio engineer and production assistant. The music in this program was written and performed by John Floridis.